This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is Ask Bill. This is our monthly Fun Facts Friday Ask Bill episode, where I answer specific real estate investing questions received during the month from emails, in-person conversations, phone calls, or through online portals such as BiggerPockets.com and Quora. One of our goals of the Old Dogs REI Network is to help educate and encourage fellow real estate investors to share what little knowledge we may have by answering your questions and to help other investors to broaden their understanding of real estate investing and hopefully avoid some of the mistakes that can cost you later. But before we get started here, but wait! What are we celebrating? Well, I will tell you, this is our 300th episode of the Old Dogs REI Network. That's right, 300 episodes. Can you believe that? Wow, I can't believe it. But hey, this is exciting. This is fun. 300 episodes, man, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, that's a lot of episodes, but anyway, I just thought we'd just make a big deal out of it. It is our 300th episode, so we're going to do some things a little different today just for the heck of it. So one of the things I want to do is a countdown of our most popular shows based on downloads by our listeners. But I thought instead what I'll do is I'm going to list in the show notes our top 10 most popular episodes for those who are interested. And what's interesting is because sort of word of mouth gets around and people start listening, or they listen to one episode repeatedly. So these are shows that people really like or at least get some content out of. So I'm going to list those in the show notes for today as part of the fun celebration for the 300th. Episode here. I have a couple of short announcements, but then I'm going to jump into the show here. I was just recently in Indianapolis, and this was fun because this is the first time I got to take my wife with me out there. She has never seen our properties out there, so she got to go along with me. And we were doing a walkthrough on a property that we are interested in purchasing. And when you do a walkthrough, I mean, in terms of a formal inspection, we literally go through each and every unit. And that is kind of a long process, but we do that because we really want to make sure that everything we see, everything we're capable of seeing, checks out the way it's supposed to and stuff. So that was really fun because we just never got to do that together. She got to see Indianapolis. She really likes it. She's wondering why we don't live there and all this other stuff. But anyway, it was really a blast. Got to hang out with some fun people there that I know that I work with on a regular basis. And it was just a real fun trip. No other formal announcements to make. I will add, I can't really talk about the property because officially I can't announce it because we're going to syndicate and we're going to be a 506C, which means that, you know, it's going to be open to accredited as well as non-accredited, but that means we can't really advertise it. So if you want to get involved with maybe investing in this particular project or projects like this, we have to basically have a relationship with you. And that's why people that sign up for our investor newsletter, I contact them and try to see if we can talk so that we can officially have that relationship established. So if you are an investor and we have not talked, I mean, if you're on the investors list and we have not talked, give me a buzz. Let me know when you might be available. We'll talk and we'll get that relationship going. Also, if you are not on the investors newsletter list, and just so you know, we haven't sent out a newsletter in a while, and that's kind of my fault. But so if you may still be on the list, but you haven't received one in a while, it's because I haven't sent anything out, but we do have something hopefully to send real soon here regarding this property. So so you can get on the list. It's real easy to do. You can either do that through the Old Dogs website or at ManiceroProperties.com. So we're going to do, this is my Ask Bill segment here is usually, you know, these are formal questions that I get from people and I answer them specifically. But what I've got here is are questions that I just kind of receive informally from people on a regular basis. And I thought, hey, this would be kind of a good time to address these. So although I don't have one particular person to attribute these questions to, they are questions that we are asked. So let me just kind of jump into them. I got three different ones. This one I get asked a lot is people are asking, hey, how is the house mom thing working out for you? And those of you that don't know what that is for my 22 unit, we had a problem because it's too small because it's only 22 units. You can't have on-site management. At least it doesn't make sense financially to do that. So I was struggling. A lot of times things would happen there. I didn't have a contact. I didn't have somebody that I could have respond quickly. And there's a lot of other issues too. But basically, I came up with this idea, what I call a house mom. Kind of like, you know, you have in a sorority or fraternity where, you know, it's a person that's there, that just there to just kind of keep eyes, you know, keep in ears open to hear and to, you know, kind of help keep things under control. And so I've, you know, searched for somebody. I got a referral for someone and basically we did a trade out. Basically they can live there for free, but there's a whole list of things that they're supposed to do. And, you know, the rent at that time was $450 a month. And so it wasn't really a big expenditure for me. I thought it'd be well worth it if this person could do everything that we put on their agreement to do. So we found this young lady who is an artist, you know, a working artist, very busy. She's not home a lot. I thought that she might have been home, you know, a little bit longer than she worked out that she was. So we got this started and it started off really well. Some of the tasks that they had to do were to watch the place, you know, if there's any issues with the any of the tenants to report those, if there's anything illegal happening, not only in the building, but sort of outside on the street to report those issues to the police. You know, keep the place clean, pick up trash outside, enforced that we had instituted some new rules. One of them was no smoking. The other was no pets. Those are some of the key things. Also showings to potential tenants and you know, having somebody on site is really an advantage because you can get people later in the evening when they get off work or on weekends. So it makes it a little bit easier. She also coordinated with our Airbnb units, did cleaning, and also was our liaison to our guests at our Airbnb. So it was, you know, I worked out very good in some areas, and in other areas it kind of started to fall apart. Okay, like I said on this show, we share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And well, unfortunately, things started to get kind of not so good. She ended up moving a boyfriend in. Apparently, we're getting into heavy pot smoking, and it's not legal in Indianapolis. There was just kind of things, too. It was just really falling down sort of on the job. Stop picking things up. Stop, you know, being that key sort of enforcement person there. So it's not really working out that great, unfortunately. And so we're looking at a transition there. But so, you know, wanted to let you know about that. I think there, I'd kind of always ask my question when things like this happen, you know, what went wrong? What could I have done differently? You know, it just goes, it's almost like finding a tenant. You know, sometimes you get tenants, you think they're great, you check their backgrounds, you do all the right stuff, but they end up not being so great. So kind of that situation here. But it doesn't mean I won't do this in the future. I just didn't seem to work real well with this particular situation. So we did clean things up there. We did a lot of great things, you know, that happened during that period that really were positive. And we've got some great tenants there now. We've got some good checkpoints and things in place that make it operate much better now, that doesn't require so much of a presence there. So we're looking at, you know, sort of transitioning out of that at this point. So that is what happened with the house mom thing. Another question I get is people ask about, what about, you know, capital improvements and those types of things? How do you allow for that? Now, there may be some industry standards in terms of how much you should set aside. I think it really should depend on your income and, you know, what your cash flow is on the property. But I really would recommend highly that you set up a separate account for capital improvements and those unexpected things that can happen when you own a property. That's been one of the key issues that I had with the 22 unit was the fact that there were a lot of things that had to be fixed. There were a lot of things that we were upgrading. Now, we did have a capital budget, a capital improvement budget when we bought the place, specific things that we did that were a part of our initial budget when we purchased. But then there are other things that kind of happen after that. You have appliances that get damaged. You got to repair them or replace them or maybe get a new appliance. You have sort of AC heater repairs, water heaters, roofs, weather damage, exterior issues, whether it's landscaping, flooding, things that can affect the property that you just need to do to maintain it. And then there are, you know, your turnaround expenses. Now, that you should budget that separately, but those are very real. Now, we, on our turnarounds, we made those really an opportunity to upgrade to nicer countertops, nicer kitchens, nicer bathrooms. Actually, we moved to all vinyl floors, the wood vinyl looking floors, which for us, I think are going to make a lot more sense, because one of the biggest expenses is cleaning or replacing carpet. Well, when you have the vinyl floors, yeah, they can get damaged too, but you keep extra little planks that you can replace the damaged ones if that happens. But the cost is significantly, you really do save on the turnarounds on those. And so if with the vinyl floors, all you're looking at is paint and maybe, you know, maybe some little repairs here and there, minor things. So it does reduce your overall expenses. My recommendation would be to at least set aside, you know, 10 to 20% of your income, okay, for those types of things, things that you don't expect. And now some of these older buildings like this, you have things like boilers, and we got rid of our boilers early on, but you know, you have electrical, you have plumbing, you have just things that can happen, and you want to be prepared for those. You don't want to take away from your monthly income, especially if you're using that income for your livelihood. You want to have the separate budget so that when you do have those needs for funds that need to be poured in that are not a part of your regular repairs and maintenance, then it's a smart idea. Let's look at our third question here. Now, this is one, you know, I get like a lot of different questions. I get people, for example, that are retired. They're living on Social Security. They don't have a lot of funds there, because if you think about it, you know, Social Security, what can you get? You know, maybe $2,000. I don't know if you even get that much out of Social Security, but it's really hard to live on that amount, especially if you've got to pay rent and you've got other expenses, cars, things of that nature. So people will ask me, you know, how can real estate investing help me? What can I do? Because I don't really have a lot to put into it. Basically, my answer usually comes in a lot of different forms. Mostly, I'll ask that person, you know, what are your goals? What do you want to do? What do you, you know, what do you want to have these funds for? And just try to identify sort of their needs and what they're looking to do with the funds that are coming in. And generally, I think a lot of folks say, you know, what I'd like to do is I'd like to build up a portfolio, but I don't really have the capital or the cash, you know, to be able to do that. So what I do is these are three recommendations that I would have that would, I think, could help you to achieve that financial freedom in your retirement with little or no money required. So just looking at sort of the realities of retirement for many people, you know, pensions used to be really common and retirement plans and your businesses, and just so much of that went away, especially in 2008 with the, you know, the economic crash there, that many people lost their pension funds. It's just really bad. And so Social Security is kind of all people have left. And some people may be fortunate enough to have some, maybe a government pension or something of that nature. But you know, even that might not be able to meet the needs that you have. So first thing you really got to look at is, what do you want your retirement to look like? You know, you're a pretty simple person that really is not going to do a lot, just wants to be able to have the funds there, you know, as they need them. But or are you somebody that maybe, you know, really wants to travel or has hobbies that they really like to get behind, or sporting type activities, golf or hiking or biking or sailing. And, you know, maybe you want to go to school, you know, learn a new language or some new skill. Maybe you want to serve others, you know, just, you know, take this opportunity in your retirement years, your golden years, to be able to help others. Or maybe it's like family. You really want to just be able to pour time into your family. I know, you know, guys that I've known, and including myself, you know, when I was really working heavy in the corporate side of things, I didn't really have a lot of time to spend with the kids and nieces and nephews and so forth. So in my retirement years, I really look forward to being able to spend time with them. And so there's, you know, maybe there's travel involved to go fly out and see kids or grandkids. Maybe you want to get involved and help them, you know, get their first home, or to be able to have the wedding of their dreams, or, you know, maybe help them with their education or maybe medical or dental needs. You know, there's a lot of things that our families, you know, that would love to be able to get some help with and stuff. So, you know, things like that. Or maybe it's just sort of the practical. Maybe you've got funds coming in and it's enough to, you know, to give you the lifestyle you want. But then there's those uncertainties. How long, you know, will my funds last? Especially if you're drawing from a 401k or an IRA, or, you know, you kind of look at rising medical costs and the quality of care, and, or maybe it's long-term care. You know, how long, you know, people are just living longer now. And what's that going to mean in terms of, are you going to require assistance as you get older? Maybe assisted living. Those are the kinds of things that, you know, a good, strong retirement income, or to build up, again, a reserve or a portfolio, a real estate portfolio, can help you with. So if you're looking at real estate investing, I just like, you know, to tell people, you got to get real and you got to think about it in order to do it. Real estate investing is amazing and it can do great things, but you got to be willing to do at least three things here. One of them, you got to work hard. There's definitely some work that goes into it to get started, especially if you're going to scale up and you're going to try and build something up that will, you know, that will increase in value and increase income and so forth. So there is some work, and you got to be prepared to put that time in. Doesn't mean you have to work the whole time. I think once you get your portfolio established, then you're in sort of a maintenance mode, and hopefully, you know, you're hiring property managers and others that will deal with the day-to-day stuff. Second of all, you need to learn something new. So you're going to have to educate yourself. So there's, you know, education involved. And that is, yeah, that just means sometimes, you know, reading books, listening to podcasts like this one, you know, webinars, maybe even going to some boot camps, things like that. So you want to educate yourself. And then a final thing is, you may have to spend some money. There are some things that don't cost anything. But I would say that there's going to be some money involved that you need to be aware of. So those are like the three main things you should be willing to do if you want to go into real estate investing. Here are some of the things that I would recommend, and I do recommend to people on a pretty regular basis, depending on their situation. First thing I talk a lot about is, house hacking or apartment hacking. When you get older, you got this big house, your kids move out, you're an empty nester. You've got this big house you got to care for and take care of. Some people consider that this is my bank account, this house, and they don't want to sell it. They don't want to think about selling it. Maybe they'll take out an equity line, but it's paid for. They don't want to have to deal with that either. So sometimes it's hard for people to release that. Right now the market's kind of, in some areas, it's actually starting to decline, like in California and some other coastal cities. But I would say you're pretty close to the top as far as where rates are going to be right now. It probably is a good time to sell. And if you sold, you could still have a lot of money in the, from the sale. Hopefully you could put aside and maybe use a small amount maybe for your first investment. So there's some opportunity there with the idea of house hacking or apartment hacking. And, just to briefly, there is going to be some cost involved. You're going to have to buy a house, or you might want to finance it and put 20% down or 25% down. And then you live in either one room of the house and rent out the other rooms, or you live in, a small multi, maybe a duplex or a quad, four units. You live in one, rent out the others. And so that can be a real neat thing because, for example, if you wanted to get an FHA loan, you would have 0 to 3% down, so a very small amount down to get into it. You can even get money for rehab if it needs to be upgraded while you're living there. And so you've got, the opportunity there to live there. You only have to live there, my understanding is, for a year, and then you can move out. So you could live in the unit number one, rent out the other three. You would live rent-free for the time that you're there, maybe even get some additional income out of it. And then you could move out and do the same and repeat and keep doing this and build up your portfolio that way. It's a real neat way. It's a good way to leverage. And, you can also use the Burr method too, which we've talked about on this show too, where you buy it, you rehab it, refinance it, and so forth. And you just kind of follow that methodology. So the advantages are definitely there. There's some disadvantages, though. One, you have to live there for a year. You're going to have to live in a place that also your tenants live. That could be a drag sometimes, especially if they're always bugging you about this, that, and the other thing. You might have to move to a different region. It might be hard to find a small multi where you live, so you might have to go to a different state, away from people that and maybe even away from family. You're going to be responsible for everything there: maintenance and repairs, mortgage payments, property tax, insurance, evictions, things like that, and just finding good tenants, finding a good property manager. Those things can be very intensive to manage as well. That's one area I think that can work, but it does take a little bit longer to build up to where you want to be. Another one that I recommend to some people is called Airbnb arbitrage. Now this is, I have Airbnb three units right now in my 22 unit that they're great. They're just producing money every month, and it's fantastic. It's consistent and it's higher than I can rent those same units out for. But Airbnb arbitrage is something different. That's where you actually rent a house or an apartment and then you sublet it out, technically, to people for Airbnb. And it's a little, just some education there. You need to know how to do this properly. But generally, you're putting together a business, like a corporate housing business. You'd get a separate LLC, and you approach the landlords or the companies managing these apartments or houses, and you set up this arrangement where you basically rent from them, and then you rent it out at Airbnb rates, which if you do it right, generally, and again, I'm just giving you real generalities here, but generally you'd have to have enough money to get started on something like this where you can pay first and last month, and you have to furnish it. So you've got to not only furnish it, but you've got to, get wireless in there or, some sort of cable service or whatever, and, get a nice high-definition TV and so forth. Those are, you know, some of the basic things involved. Some people say, yeah, you could do this for anywhere between, you know, $4,000 and $7,000, just to get into your first place. But once you're doing this, you can generate on an average of about $900 a month in profit. If you learn how to do this and you can manage it right, you can also leverage it so that other people are doing 90% of the work. You just oversee them, and they're doing the turnarounds, they're doing the dealing with the different guests coming in and so forth. And you know, you get 10 properties like that, you've got $900 a month in monthly income coming in, which can be great. And even if it's not long term for you, you can take that $900 a month and you can start investing in properties that you actually purchase too. So there's some real advantages. You know, the big ones are you don't have to worry about the maintenance and repairs, mortgage payments, property tax, insurance. I mean, you do have some insurance you have to cover, but the main things are covered by the owners of the property. So you're a tenant still. You don't have to, you know, buy it, so you don't have to deal with bankers or loans and that kind of stuff. It can be located anywhere, which is an advantage. It could be anywhere in the U.S. Again, you want it to be scalable, so you know, make sure that it's easily scaled, and that will allow you to add more and more properties easily. You can, and this thing can run on its own while you're traveling or you're doing the things that you love to do. Some of the disadvantages are, you know, local laws can change. Some cities are not friendly to Airbnb, and so that may just kill your business. You know, the worst comes to worst, you can just write out the lease and let go of it. It's kind of nice that you can walk away from it easily. Or you may just want to pay off the lease and get out if that kind of situation happens. At the beginning, it's kind of labor intensive, just getting it set up. You're buying furniture, you're doing a lot of things. But once they're set up, it can be, you know, it can be really good. And the final thing here is wholesaling. And we've had a lot of folks on our show that have talked about this. The neat thing with wholesaling is you really can get into it with very, very little or no money. And basically what you're doing is you're matching buyers with sellers. You find an off-market property, you find a buyer, and you put the two together. You get the property under contract temporarily, and you sell the contract to the buyer. And it's a way you can quickly make money. You don't have to do the rehab like with flipping. So you know, it's as is. You can make, on an average, some people make $5,000 to $10,000 to, you know, $20,000 a deal, depending on where you're buying and selling. So it can be a great way to get started. Once you get those big checks in, you can take out what you need as your living expenses, and you can use the rest to maybe buy properties too. Or you'll find a deal that you want to acquire that you think will be a good rental. And, you know, so that's what some people do. Some wholesalers will, you know, they'll flip or sell maybe 3 out of 4 properties. The fourth one, they will hold on to, and they're building up their real estate portfolio in that process. So some of the disadvantages, there is definitely a learning curve. You got to know what you're doing to do this right. And it is very labor intensive. You have to, you know, see a lot of houses and call a lot of folks before you actually find those off-market deals and sellers that are willing to work with you. Marketing can be expensive if you have to market it, and it can be like a full-time job as well. So those are some of the things that that you might consider if you're, you know, retired and you're looking to bring in that additional income to build that legacy to hand down to your children, whatever your goals and interests may be. But, you know, there are some ways you can do it, and real estate investing can do it. It's not a get-rich-quick thing by any means, but these are all methodologies that you can use to help to bring you to that goal that you would like to see as your ideal retirement. Well, that's it for today, gang. Gosh, a happy 300th here. Anyway, not anniversary, but 300th episode. So please note, everything I mentioned here today will be in our show notes at the Old Dogs website. You can find them at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the Ask Bill episode. Well, that's it. Until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.